Good morning. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Fixing inequalities in New Mexico's public school system is a top priority for lawmakers and the governor this year. The state is under court order to provide better education for students with disabilities, economically disadvantaged students, Native American students, and English language learners. It's a huge, complicated task, and decision makers will have to consider the needs of a diverse range of students. Are you an educator, an administrator, a student, a parent? Do you have your own ideas on how to create equity in public schools? We'd like to hear from you this hour. Call 277-5866. That's within the 505 area code. Or you can tweet at us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I want to welcome in the studio this morning Diane Torres-Velasquez, member of the New Mexico Education Coalition and president of the Latino Education Task Force. Thanks for being here, Diane.
Thank you, Hannah.
And also Victoria Tafoya, member of the Transform Education NM Coalition and director of the New Mexico Association for Bilingual Education.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Thanks. So I want to acknowledge first that fixing New Mexico's education system is a massive issue. We're not going to be able to touch on every part of it this hour. But first, I do want to just get a brief recap of the consolidated lawsuit. So Judge Sarah Singleton ruled on this about 6 months ago. Diane, could you just briefly remind us, how long have these lawsuits been around?
They were filed in 2014, and we waited a couple of years in order. The plaintiffs needed to be ready, and so we ended up having the trial in 2017.
And so let's just jump right in. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has said that universal pre-K is a big priority.
Mm-hmm.
How would having guaranteed access to high quality pre-K change things for the families that y'all work with? Victoria, do you want to?
Yeah, absolutely. We know so much about pre-K and the opportunities it provides for our four-year-olds. And so having a universal pre-K for all students in New Mexico, we know that it would help to close that gap when students start school, both with their language development, as long as the preschool is acknowledging the culture and language of the students. But in general, with all our students in New Mexico having access to pre-K, it's an earlier start for them, but it also helps overall with long-term progress and helps with the goals of meeting becoming college and career ready. It's that spectrum. And so when our students enter at pre-K, we can envision what it would be like for them when they graduate college and career ready.
Diane.
Yes, I totally agree. I'm not sure if I had mentioned, but in 2010, I was the Hispanic Education Liaison for the state of New Mexico. And so I wrote the first status report on Hispanic education, and I looked at all ethnic groups in my report. And one of the highlights of that report was what we were doing with pre-K. Mm-hmm. At that time, we didn't have as many programs as we do right now, but they were the ones coming from the PED were of excellent quality. We had two different kinds, one at that time from CYFD and one from the PED. And they were
Which
phenomenal.
Which is still the case, right?
I believe so, but I'm not sure if that's going to be changing in the way that this is implemented. It's kind of hard to tell, and I haven't actually seen the actual bills, the proposed legislation. But what I would like to say is that there is a marked difference in how we define quality. And so when we're looking at the actual programs that really, really demonstrated incredible cognitive, social, all kinds of gains, physical development gains for students, we were looking at programs that didn't sit kids in front of computers for tests, didn't sit kids in front of a book to learn piece by piece with, you know, drill and question and direct instruction where they were just told what to learn and then expected to learn it. The curriculum, I guess, is what I'm getting at, made the entire difference. And so when that curriculum is based on the principles of early childhood, then you have those gains. But if you've got, and I was hearing that during the last 8 years, things changed with how we were doing pre-K in some places. Mm-hmm. So when you've got a strong curriculum, strong language development, and as Victoria said, when you use and build on the student's language and culture, then you've really got significant gains for the children and their families, especially because in the programs I saw, the families were directly involved.
And that's really, like,
the crux of this lawsuit and a lot of these issues, right, are like, it's not just about the quantity of whatever program or whatever, you know, amount of money. It's about the quality and making sure that things, that the curriculum serves all students equally. And I want to mention New Mexico has already had laws governing Indian education, Hispanic education,
exactly,
bilingual education. But the judge in this case has found that those laws have not been fully enforced.
Exactly.
I mean, what's a big thing that needs to change in terms of enforcing those?
Yeah. So, I mean, thank goodness our lawmakers, past and present, saw the need for the Indian Ed Act, the Hispanic Ed, and the Bilingual Education Act, acts that have been around that acknowledges the diversity of New Mexico. What needs to change? They need to become programmatic. So we need to see these laws as not just these visionary laws that are out there that feel good to communities, but the Indian Education Act, there needs to be some accountability. And so school districts across our state who serve Native American students must ensure that they're supporting the needs of the students based on the Indian Education Act, but also the needs of the community. So part of what the act calls for is consultation and collaboration with tribal communities and districts. So it's an opportunity for our public schools to interact and be collaborative and thought partners with our tribal communities about the best needs, about meeting the needs of the students that they serve. With our Hispanic Education Act, it's an act that's out there that's not funded. So right now, there are no dollars associated with the Hispanic Education Act. Our Bilingual Act, again, longstanding, that has been funded. Currently, districts can choose whether they'd like to participate or offer a bilingual education program. So what that does is we have districts who are all in and they're trying their best to provide bilingual programming. You know, get to choose across the 5 bilingual program models that exist. And we have other school districts whose students would benefit from bilingual education programs, but maybe because of one lack of staffing that they may have, or just they feel like maybe they don't have the numbers, or there's other reasons why they don't decide not to choose a bilingual education program to serve their students. And so these 3 acts, one, need accountability, need coordination. Many of the acts call for things such as reporting, or the public education department reporting to the legislature the progress that are being made. And so I believe with one of the bills that's being proposed by Transform Education New Mexico really looks thoughtfully at those 3 bureaus and acts, and we'd like to see those elevated within the public education department to really support the transformation of education in New Mexico.
I want to welcome also to the program this morning, Wilhelmina Yazzi is joining us by phone from Gallup. Good morning, Wilhelmina.
Good morning, everyone.
Thanks for joining us. So you are one of the plaintiffs in the Yazzi lawsuit. Tell us a bit about you and your children's experiences in public schools, in Gallup-McKinley school districts, right?
Yes. My children are currently enrolled in the Gallup-McKinley County District. Their schools, I think primarily my concerns were that they didn't have enough textbooks. They weren't able to bring textbooks home to study. Teachers didn't have enough basic classroom supplies as well. And my other major concern was when it came to testing, they didn't score at grade level. And in order for them to graduate, they needed to pass these tests. So I felt that they didn't have enough academic support and resources to get them ready for these tests. Also, there were some limited after-school programs when I looked into how to help my son. And there was also substitutes that covered classes for weeks and even months. Mm. And this is just my son's school here in the town of Gallup. It's way much worse than the rural communities and the schools on the tribal land. They lack more technology. Some schools don't even have internet access. They have transportation problems. Some of them don't even have computers. Things that we have here in my son's schools, a lot of the schools out there have very limited resources. And sometimes I feel like they have been forgotten or ignored. And one of the most important teachings that our children need coming from a Navajo, the Navajo Dene tribe, is that culture and language is very important to us. So that I think it's very important that we bring the culturally relevant programs and resources into our schools. Some schools currently do offer, like, language class. I think we need to give more of our history. When I went to school, you know, I didn't learn my history. I didn't learn about my people. I learned more of the Western, you know, of the what America was and that kind of sort of history, but I never really got to learn who I was, although it was taught to me at home, and my language, my Navajo language was my first language.
And through this lawsuit, of course, and over decades, it's become clear that New Mexico's education system, you know, wasn't really designed to honor or accommodate those cultures in the various places where our public schools serve, right? And that's something that the judges made clear needs to change, that language and culture needs to be represented. Wilhelmina, what would it look like for, you know, your kids' classrooms to really educate them and support the culture and language that they may be getting at home or in other parts of their life?
I really think it's important. It'll really help our children, you know, some of our young children, at-risk students, behavioral, you know, that those type of things. They're yearning for identities and their values. And others that already know their culture, their language, they're searching for acceptance. So being culturally connected to our language and culture helps us find purpose. It guides us. And then at the same time, learning who we are, where we come from, it gives us confidence and motivation to keep going, to, you know, make ourselves better, to help our people. And it also teaches our children our way of life and what it means. With that, it gives us pride in who we are and where we come from. Also, one of the other important things I think is also teaching the non-Native children and some of our educators, you know, our history and who we are. So that way, it, in return, if you know, you know, the background of a person that's not of your culture or of your race, it gives you respect for that person when you know where they are, instead of just maybe stereotyping and just, you know, not realizing who they truly are. And with that, I think it brings, you know, respect upon all of us.
I want to welcome now to the program Senator Mimi Stewart, head of the Legislative Education Study Committee and Senate Education. Senator Stewart, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we were just hearing from Wilhelmina Yazzie. Wilhelmina, if you would... if you could stay on the phone, thank you so much. Senator Stewart, how are you trying to balance the needs of different stakeholders in this lawsuit? And also, you know, within the session, there's going to be all these other education issues that come up, discipline, charter schools, that may or may not relate directly to the Yazzie Martinez case. But how are you balancing all those different things in your committees currently?
Well, it's going to be a wild session. You know, I listened to Wilhelmina's story, and you know, we've just got to get this right. We have to have teachers trained in the multicultural aspect of our state. We need to get more teachers. We need to send more resources to our rural districts. We need to raise pay so that we can retain and attract teachers. Wilhelmina talked about limited after school. We have a bill that puts a significant amount of money into what's called extended learning. So that could be for before and after school, enrichment programs, interventions, We certainly need to train more Native American teachers. We have a loan forgiveness program that we're trying to put $25 million into, and our focus is going to be bilingual teachers, Native American teachers, early childhood teachers, and special education teachers. Those are the shortage areas. We certainly are paying attention to Judge Singleton's ruling. It has very significant aspects in it. We are trying to put more accountability between the PED and the public schools around these acts that we have, the Indian Education Act, the Hispanic Culture Act, the Multicultural Bilingual Act. All those acts were written for a purpose, and we haven't really met that challenge. And so we're trying to put provisions in so that teachers are more trained in the aspects of those and that districts have more resources, essentially. For 10 years, we have not been funding these schools, really before that, adequately. And so Wilhelmina mentioned the textbooks. That's been a real problem for 10 years. We are putting a full amount in the textbooks this year, plus we're giving districts over $20 million to pay for back textbooks that they don't have. So, you know, we're excited. We're hopeful. We have a governor who's paying attention. We finally have money. We have not had revenues for at least 10 years, and the previous governor wouldn't really let us raise any revenues. So it's a combination of factors that have gotten us to this point, but there's just no excuses. We have money now. We have direction from the lawsuit, and we have many, many people that come and visit us and give us ideas. So there are good bills in the pipeline, and I'm just hoping that we can get them passed.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, the balance of power has really shifted this year. Democrats have essentially all the power in state government. The governor is on board. How will you ensure, Senator Stewart, that stakeholders' voices are heard and not just those who agree with the platforms, you know, of Democratic leadership already?
Well, all our committees are open. We've started all of our committees, and certainly the first day this week we had an hour and a half of testimony on a bill that was being presented. So they can, you know, we're really a year-round legislature with our very robust interim committee meetings. So the LESC meets every month in between May and December, and we've heard from a lot of people. We continue to hear from people. You know, the issues up here are that we have a lot of new money, but we have to be careful because the price of oil is already dropping. We don't want to set programs in place or salaries in place that we're going to have to come back in a couple of years and cut. That's what's happened the last 10 years. So we need to be fiscally responsible, but we need to put money into the budget. We're looking at $500 million going into the state equalization guarantee plus other issues. So people can come to all these committee meetings. They can email us. They can call us. They can speak at these committee meetings. We're not all going to agree. I mean, it's kind of a rough lesson up here that compromise is what is the nature of the game, and that goes for everyone. I mean, I'm very disappointed that one of the bills I'm sponsoring, I'm going to have to cut out part of it because I just don't have agreement from my own colleagues. So it's a messy process. This also, we're not going to fix everything in January. This is a start. It's a start. We hope to make a really good start by putting funding into these schools, resources. You know, Wilhelmina also mentioned that there was just no, not just textbooks in her son's classrooms, but there were no materials. The governor has already put in place, she wants a $5 million fund to go to teachers just for supplies. So I just want us to get started on righting this ship and transforming our education and to continue to do it year after year until we all feel good about our schools, all of us.
All right. Senator Mimi Stewart, thank you so much for joining us. Wilhelmina Yazzie, a plaintiff in this case on the line from Gallup, do you have any final thoughts for lawmakers as they think about these compromises?
Well, basically, I just want to say, you know, the decisions that we make today will affect the future of our children. To me, education is very important. It's always been important in my family. My mother was an educator for over 30 years. She started off being a preschool teacher in our tribal schools on our tribal land. So that she pretty much set that, you know, the education in our family. So with that, you know, all of our children deserve good quality education, no matter what their background is, where they come from. And I'm speaking on behalf of my children and also all the children in our state, also for our Native American children who've always been put at the bottom all these years. I mean, it's been, over a century? Our Native children have been discriminated against through the education system. And I don't want to go back to that history, but now we're in the present, you know, now we have a chance to do something. And primarily, I just want the best for my children. I want them to be confident, to believe in themselves. I want them to be successful. Most of all, I want them to be proud of who they are and where they come from. So with this ruling, I'm hopeful. And it is a start. It is a start.
All right. Wilhelmina Yazzie, thank you so much for joining us. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. We've got a lot of calls waiting on the line, and we will take those. But first, to a brief break.
This month, we visit with neo-contemporary Navajo artist Randy L. Barton about his album, The Blessing Way, that mixes in electric sounds, brushed with b-boy breakbeats, and tribal rhythms, including sounds from his Diné Nation. We hope you'll make plans to join us for this on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Get 2019 off to a great start. Get rid of that car that served you well in the past, but it's no longer worth keeping. Turn a liability into an asset by donating it to KUNM. We handle all the details, from towing it away to sending a tax receipt. Plus, it really helps KUNM to get the new year rolling. You can donate it online at KUNM.org. Under support, choose Donate Your Vehicle. Or just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-KUNM-CAR. 586-6227.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today is how to fix public education in New Mexico. You can give us a call, 277-5866. We're also on Twitter. Follow the hashtag Let's Talk NM. We will hear from another top lawmaker from Santa Fe, or in Santa Fe this morning. But first, I want to take a call from Edward in Santa Fe. You are on the show. What would you like to add?
Sure. I just have to say, I have four daughters, the youngest of whom is in second grade right now in Rio Rancho, a plaintiff district. And while I'm happy to hear, you know, folks like Senator Stewart saying that they're ready to get started, that this session is seen as a start, my daughter doesn't have the chance to redo second grade while the legislature figures this out. Time is passing by quickly. And I just would like to remind our legislators of two things. First, what the judge found is that out of all areas that state government funds, none of them have an equal level of constitutional magnitude as education. In fact, the judge said competing priorities not of constitutional magnitude are secondary, and the legislature may not yield to them until constitutionally provisions is made for elementary and secondary education. And so I don't think we have time to kind of wait and just get a start this session. I think that we need to actually fully fund a sufficient education for all children now. And if you look at what came out in trial, economists found that just to get New Mexico back up to 2008 spending levels, pre-recession spending levels, when you factor in inflation, it would take about $380 million. And so I think it's somewhat disingenuous and irresponsible for the legislature to put forth a budget of $400 million and then celebrate that it's all of this new money when, in fact, it's really only about $20 million over 2008 numbers. And we know 2008 education levels were also insufficient. So I would just ask for them to really prioritize, as the judge has called upon and as their own legislation in the past has called upon, prioritize the programs and services that our children need for a sufficient education. And I think they've laid that out really clearly in a multicultural education framework that meets the needs of the 76% of our students in New Mexico who are linguistically and culturally diverse and what's good for all children. So I would just say that putting an initial cap on funding at $400 million is probably going to fall well short of the threshold that our Constitution and that the judge pointed out for our children.
All right, Edward, I have to pause you there because we have other calls. Thank you so much for that. I want to go to Javier in Albuquerque. You are on the air. Good morning. Javier, can you hear me? All right. Well, we have also on the line this morning Senator John Arthur Smith. Good morning, Senator. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So you are the head of Senate Finance and really a gatekeeper when it comes to fiscal proposals. What's your response to that last caller in terms of the constitutional obligations of funding education and ensuring that the state adequately funds education?
Well, a little background. Constitutionally, we were charged with a balanced budget in the state of New Mexico. And in the past, when I was one of the few legislative members that forecast the downturn in the economy, there was two of us on the Senate side saw that coming. We were not very popular when we were trying to raise revenues or encourage austerity. And as a result, we're sorry that we were right. The last 9 to 10 years have been extremely difficult on that. But it points to the need for a reliable revenue stream. And a lot of citizens around the state fully do not understand that 45 cents out of every dollar that we raise in revenue is coming from oil and gas. That's an awful lot of eggs in one basket. And if we're going to have education reform as such, you've got to have a reliable revenue stream. We appreciate the revenues from oil and gas, but that is not reliable. As it goes up, it will also go down. We've set aside additional reserves to try and ride out hard times. We appreciate the executive branch and their budget people concurring with the Legislative Finance Committee budget on increasing the reserves. But that's one-time money. That's not reoccurring money. With that being said, as Vice Chair of the Legislative Finance Committee and Chair of the Senate Finance Committee, with the Legislative Education Study Committee, when we were meeting during the interim to try and address some of the district court's concerns within the lawsuit, my instructions were give us something sustainable and financially responsible where we can move ahead with that. And that was basically the input with the Legislative Education Study Committee.
Senator Smith, let me pause you. Of course, the state has finite resources. You know, looking at different revenue streams will always be an option. But something's always got to give, right? And one way to look at this, the findings of this lawsuit, is that at-risk students, so Native American students, English language learners, low-income students, those with disabilities, so on, have already been bearing the brunt of this financial calculation for decades, right? So what are you doing to see that long-standing inequity gets corrected, or that we get on a more equitable path?
Yeah, a magic bullet cannot be accomplished in one session. It's going to be
sure.
A continuation as it unfolds the next 2, 3, and 4 years. We have to build capacity in that arena on that. Any appropriation, whether it's additional $500 million or whether it's additional billion, if you look at education funding, 87% of that goes to salary and payroll. Now, we're talking about programs, but when you're talking about salary and payroll, you're talking about a lot more people, and the universities are not even putting them out yet. So we have to work in concert with higher education also to give us the providers on that. You know, I represent one of the smallest school districts in the entire state and the second largest school district in the entire state. I live right on the border. I've got five school districts. They have more than their share of at-risk students, and we're trying to address that as responsibly as we are financially capable of doing on that. The last caller, when he alluded to his daughter, I was a second-grade retention at Wood Gormley in Santa Fe, New Mexico on that. In those days, we were expected to read by the second grade. I couldn't do it on that. Now we've moved that up to third-grade requirement. Or attempted to do that with the last administration. So I'm well aware of that. My wife is a retired educator and has always worked in very low-income schools on that. But what I want is a plan. I don't want a political deal. And I want a long-term plan that we can move forward with.
One last question, Senator. This comes from a caller who says the worldviews of corporate Democrats in the Senate coalition who refuse to fund the court remedies mean that this will be the same old, not funding education to serve all students. What's your response to that, that the status quo is a problem or that needs to change in some significant way?
I have not talked about the status quo. Well, we're talking about significant changes mm-hmm. in funding in public education. I want to remind your listeners that this was a district court ruling. This is not a Supreme Court ruling. A district court ruling is completely different than a Supreme Court ruling on that. The court dictated that we needed to fix it but did not quantify it, and the district court cannot enforce it. Supreme Court has that ability to have stronger encouragement for compliance than what a district court has. With that being said, I think we're and our education committees are moving in a very responsible fashion, but we still are living with the constitutional guidelines that we have to have a balanced budget.
All right, Senator John Arthur Smith, thanks so much for coming on the show this morning. I want to take a couple calls. Molly from Albuquerque, you are on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to add?
I would like to add this. First of all, I'm so appreciative to be on your talk show and be able to say something. Thank you so much for allowing people to call in. I'm an educator in Albuquerque Public Schools and have worked between APS and Bernalillo counties for 28 years. And I also work a lot with refugee children who come into our city, specifically children coming in from Africa. And these children speak Swahili largely and Xhosa and have had little to no experience in a school. And so as you can imagine, arriving at Highland High School, age 16, you've never been to school, you speak no English, and all the culture is so different. The sad thing we see happening is many of these children end up being 18 and ready to graduate, still don't have a command of English, and have very limited possibilities for work or furthering their education. And their futures are really bleak. Their families are terribly stressed by this, and they get very depressed. And so as we have an opportunity with this wonderful result of this lawsuit to implement and ELL programs that are really high quality and meet the needs of our kids, I want to give voice to all these children coming in who do not speak Native American languages or Spanish, but have very intense ELL needs. And I want to be sure we develop a program that can meet the needs of these children who are so at risk.
Molly, thanks so much for that comment. Thanks for calling in this morning. In the studio this morning, we do have Victoria Tafoya from the Transform Education NM Coalition, as well as Diane Torres Velasquez from the New Mexico Education Coalition. Yeah, Victoria responding to...
To Molly.
Okay,
yes, Molly, thanks so much for calling in. And as an educator myself, I know the challenges you describe well. You know, I think what you're also speaking to are just the capacity, the opportunity we have to support our teachers across all content levels. Be ready, feel prepared to address the language needs of our students, either our most recent refugee immigrant students or students in general who might be needing support with building their academic language. And so professional development is absolutely a topic of conversation of how best to support all our teachers in meeting the needs of our at-risk students. And so I appreciate your call and just wanted to thank you for continuing to serve our students of New Mexico.
And I would like to add, if that's okay. good morning, Molly. First of all, I love Highland High School, and I'm so glad to know that there are dedicated teachers like you working with refugee students at that school. I know that population has boomed at Highland in the last few years. And on a side note, please tell my brother-in-law hi for me. He's a teacher there with you, Bob Coffey. I would like to just look at, the information you shared is critical for us to start looking at across the state, but in particular where we have large populations of refugee students, because number one, they are English language learners, so all the support that the court has ruled would also be in their favor. And number two, the judge, the court, ruled that she wants to see multicultural education for every child. And so as you look at the methodology for teaching students to learn English, one of the things that you probably are using is their culture. And so it's very important that we have programs in our schools that affirm the students' culture, no matter whether they're born in New Mexico or not or come in from another country. It simply is a demonstration of the many riches that we have in our schools. So you've got those two pieces working together, English language learners and students in poverty. Some of your students, I imagine, if not all, are going to be in high levels of poverty. So you've got three categories there that we need to look at in terms of how the remedies would affect you. So I would encourage you to work with us. We've got two coalitions here. You can work with as many coalitions as you want or start one of your own. But we would love to have your voice influence the legislation that's coming forward. We've got the most number of bills in this session that we've ever had in any legislative session. And a large majority of them are addressed to the governor's top priority, which is this lawsuit. And so if you have something to share, please do.
And I'm glad you mentioned the two coalitions, because there's a sense, you know, there is this groundswell of people working on these issues, of bills being introduced. But it also comes with a sense that, you know, resources are scarce. Everyone wants a piece of this win, and there are so many stakeholders, and that comes with tensions, right? I mean, what are you both seeing as far as room for collaboration or challenges that are coming up with collaboration?
With this lawsuit, the judge put it together because they're both so similar, and so we have the same goals.
The Martinez case and the Yazzie case.
The Yazzie case that is represented with the Transformation Education Group and the Martinez with the Education Coalition. And so we, as much as possible, with the New Mexico Coalition, we're very values-based. Everything we have
done. Just going to say, we got about 30 seconds left. So quick wrap up from each of you.
Okay. So the values piece is where we overlap, and where we need to stay astute to our own is with our plaintiffs and making sure that whatever we support supports their needs.
Yes. And I believe both groups really do see that New Mexico has a historic opportunity to transform education for our students. And so we know standing united when needed is always the best case, and collaborating with our legislators and following and honoring the democratic process as well.
Thank you so much to both of you, Victoria Tafoya, Diane Torres-Velasquez. Thanks to our other guests today, Wilhelmina Yazzie, Senator Mimi Stewart, and Senator John Arthur Smith. The conversation, of course, doesn't end here. You can comment on our Facebook page, tag us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. You can also email us, letstalk@kunm.org. And you can find this show on KUNM.org. Our engineer today, Marino Spencer. Marisa DeMarco live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.